Hi guys, and welcome to episode 7 of the Northern Rugby Podcast. On today's episode, we've got Falcons legend Tom May with us. So Tom is the Falcons record appearance holder, as well as their record try scorer, and also represented Northampton Saints and London Welsh in Premiership, along with a spell with Toulon in France. We chat through how Tom ended up at the Falcons and the role he played in helping them to win trophies in 2001 and 2004, and we also talk about a shift to fly half later in his career, which saw him win a long overdue England cap. Tom also talks to us about life in France, how demanding French fans can be, and the disappointment of losing the 2010 Challenge Cup final from a winning position with Toulon. He also talks to us about his move back to England with Northampton Saints, Dylan Hartley's red card in the 2013 Premiership final, and helping London Welsh get back to the Premiership via the Championship playoffs. There's a lot to get through, so let's get straight into it and see what Tom had to say.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Darren. How are you doing?
Very good, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. Is that all right?
Yeah, it's absolutely fine. We're just waiting for Pete to join as well.
Okay, cool. No worries. How's it all going?
Bit tough. I'm not going to lie. I've been off work now for 6+ months.
Oh wow.
So I'm getting very, very bored. What about yourself?
Mate, weirdly, my business development consultancy, basically I got more clients through lockdown than I had before.
Oh, that's good.
Which is great, but it's just like, it's full on. I'm savage. Like kids running around, and fortunately they go to school Mondays. They're both in. There's only one day a week where one of them's home, so that's quite good now. But yeah, it's, touch wood, I've been okay, but I can imagine, you know, just I was struggling with the boredom of it to myself.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hey, Pete. How are you doing?
Not bad. Sorry about that, Darren. Technical issues.
Just discussing how Tom has been struggling with the kids through lockdown.
Yeah.
Oh, God. About to go into lockdown too as well, aren't we?
We've been off since March, essentially. Hopefully that's about to come to an end with the... I think the new season fixtures are being announced tomorrow, so hopefully we'll hear some.
Oh, are they? They're out tomorrow, are they?
Yeah.
So, well, fingers crossed we go back to work. it's a mad time for rugby at the minute, so hopefully it can survive, which I've no doubt it will.
Something's got to be done, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. It's not good at all, but we'll get there.
Tom, thanks very much for coming on the podcast with us. Nice to have you here.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
I don't know if you've listened to any of the episodes before, but typically it's just a very laid-back chat, just you know, about your career, your time with all your clubs, your time with England, and just hopefully we'll hear some stories that nobody's heard before. So just take us back to the start with a young Tom May at Richmond, and at what point did you think that you would ever go professional?
I mean, I'm not sure whether I thought I could go professional even before the game went professional, which is quite interesting. If you speak to my mum, that was all I ever said I wanted to do. But I guess I didn't really have a huge amount of belief in my ability to become a professional sportsman until I had one opportunity to play in a representative game, which led to me playing for the England under 18s ultimately. As you mentioned, I was playing at Richmond at the time, and we ended up playing against, I think it was the Falcons development team, before the, like a curtain raiser to the first team. And we bumped into Paul McKinnon at the time, who was responsible for signing loads of sort of young guys into the development squad, into the academy. And I was playing with Mickey Ward, obviously, who's now first team coach at the Falcons. And they said, "Oh, look, what are you doing next year?" And I said, "Well, my mock grades hadn't been that flash at A level, so I was I actually came out with some all right grades. My mock grades were terrible, but which meant I didn't get my place at Newcastle University. So we had to base it on my real grades with a bit of help from Paul McKinnon, and that's how I ended up in the Northeast. But it was a great club at Richmond to be involved with. first up, just gave me my opportunity really to get involved in professional sport. My lad's now in the under-11s there as well, so it's quite nice to sort of take him back.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, it's a great club with so much history as well, so must be sort of great to still be involved in some capacity there.
Yeah, like, it's just, do you know what? But the first time, a couple of times I went down, they asked me if I wanted a coach, and it was pretty awkward to say no. So I decided the safest way to go down was in a pair of jeans and shoes, which meant that there was no chance I was coaching. I'm more than happy just having a coffee and a bacon sandwich on a Sunday morning watching. I find it quite difficult coaching him, in that it's an awkward dynamic, I find. So I am. It's nice to go back to that as a club, and the associated memories of when I everything I took from mini rugby and junior rugby, which, brilliant memories, brilliant times. But now it's his opportunity. I could just sit on my backside and do nothing.
Drink coffee. Under an umbrella, yeah.
Under an umbrella, nursing a hangover, probably.
It's the way to do it. So you moved to the Falcons at about 18. At what point did you sort of break into the first team there? I mean, from my sort of memory, it was quite early on, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think basically Rob Andrew had two gammy shoulders. and as little tackling as he used to do, he managed to dislocate one of them. And that put him out for the whole of the second half of the season, basically. And I was in my sort of first year up there, and I got the opportunity to go in. I don't know, really. I didn't really, because I was thought I was so far from getting that opportunity to then have it, and then sort of get picked quite regularly for the rest of that season. I didn't really ever think about it. I just sort of turned up and played and enjoyed what the opportunity I was being given, really. And that's probably when I've always played my best, is when I don't. It's a bit like golf. You try and overthink your swing, you basically just shank it down the head.
Yeah.
But if I was always best if I sort of turned up, relaxed, and just did what I felt was right, and that sort of worked for me in that sort of first 6 months of my career, anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, you'd started off there playing with some unbelievable players as well, and coming through with, there was a lot of other good young players. Obviously, everyone knows Wilkinson coming through. We had the likes of Walder and Noon coming through as well. Did that help you a bit, that you sort of had a couple of lads that were similar age to you, so you weren't the only one sort of being cast out into the first team at the time?
Yeah, I think so. And actually, to be fair to all of those guys that we were coming in to play with, the likes of Doddy, Gary Armstrong, Richard Arnold, George Graham, one of the most terrifying people on the planet, you piss about with him, you get your ear clipped. So, we were pretty lucky from that point of view. We were looked after, that they embraced what us as youngsters could bring. Probably because they were all in their mid-30s and sort of blowing out their asses a bit, but we were given license, really, which I think as a young player is all you can ask for. If you're coming in, you're told, right, you can't do this, don't do that, but try and do this. It makes it really difficult.
Yeah, definitely.
Because ultimately you want to just express yourself. And being given that license by Rob, who believed in us, and just to say, look, go and do what you do. We believe in you. That's why you're playing. So, you've mentioned those guys, but Michael Stevenson, Hall Charlton, there was loads of guys that were given early opportunities, and we loved in it. We thrived in that environment, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, because we thrived in that environment, we then went on and had a really successful couple of years with such a young side. I mean, getting to that Tetley Bitter Cup final in 2001 was incredible. And I think you scored a few tries in the build-up to get to the final. Was it two in the semi-final against Sale? To then go into that final and to win the way that we did. You gave the final pass to Dave Walder, didn't you?
No, if it hit me, I wouldn't have passed.
You wouldn't have passed it. Well, you're on a hat-trick anyway, so...
Yeah, exactly. And we were that close to their line. I mean, it's the first time I've ever seen Nooney pass with his left hand. and to be fair, Dave goes down as the one that dotted the ball down, but all the hard work was done elsewhere, even by Ian Peel and that left-hand touch.
Yeah,
line.
Yeah.
To try and persuade, I think it was Steve Lander, the referee, that he hadn't actually touched it.
During the height of lockdown, I watched that game back. It was incredible. I mean, I know you scored a try from about 40 yards out as well. One of the two. I mean, what was that like to play with a group of lads that you'd been with for a couple of years, that sort of core of the squad had been around for a couple of years together. I mean, then to go win it in the way you did, was it, I'm probably more interested in what the bus was like on the way back to Newcastle. We're looking at the names of some of the drinkers in that side.
Well, I think, look, there was a hardcore of that team that had lost in whenever it was against Wasps.
Yeah.
Was that 99? And they took us to the cleaners, really. Wasps did in that cup final. And that really, I think, hardened us to really try and use that competition as a way of winning silverware. Back then, it wasn't the cup competition that we see now that probably isn't given... It doesn't really have the same vibe to it, because everyone can get there. Now I know the reasons why they've stopped it, because of the sort of the nature of physical contact. Once you get to a professional level, is very different from semi-professional or an amateur, and there is a danger at some point you're going to have an amateur team against a professional team. But that was almost like the FA Cup.
There's so much
like riding on it, and it was a huge day, massive crowd down at Twickenham. Look, I think to have pulled that off was brilliant. We had a great night in the Copthorne Hotel in Slough, I think it was, until I woke up the next morning and realised they'd been putting drinks on my room bill. I think we might have got a train down that time. We had a bus down after 2004. And I can quite clearly remember the door opening at the other end and about five of us just falling out.
That was another brilliant one, that.
Yeah, that was really good. But that first cup final was amazing.
I was down for both those cup finals.
What
I found incredible is you probably had 15,000, 20,000 Falcons fans there.
Yep.
In the middle of London, supporting the Falcons. It was brilliant. I think that was what the cup competition brought. And I know you look at the cup competition now and you look at, teams, and you're right, it's understandable the way they do it, but there's no sort of special spark playing in the Premiership Cup, where it's academy players and players to get some fitness. There's no spark anymore. Would you think that, I mean, the Falcons learnt this year that the Championship is a very good league. There's absolutely no doubt about that. That pretty much all Championship teams can be competitive physically, at least for a large portion of a game. So, do you think a cup competition where you maybe see Championship sides involved? Do you think that would bring an extra bit of spice? I know this season when we played, and the last time we were in the Championship, what you find is that when a team will play the side that have just been relegated, that's their cup final. And they'll really sort of go out for it. And certainly this year, we nearly got pipped a couple of times by sides like, your Bedfords, who were towards the bottom of the league. Would that be something that you think could work? Maybe a Championship Premiership Cup?
Yeah, I think it would certainly have more spark to it than the Premiership Cup as it is. I think it's just... it's a fixture filler at the moment, and you might as well not have it, in my opinion. You know, with all of the players and the demand on the players at the moment, why add a competition like that, which is effectively the same teams playing each other anyway?
Yeah.
Why add a competition like that? If you're going to do it, make it different. Do something that's very different. Even if you say, right, we'll start the competition with the Championship and National One teams, and then you have, then you get down to, I don't know, however many it is, 12 that are left from the Championship and the National One, and then they come up against the Premiership teams.
Yeah.
Because if you look at some of those National One teams as well, they're no mugs. Like, you've got a lot of lads that have played sort of top end Championship. One or two that have played in the Premiership that are then going, right, I need to go and get a job. And I'm more focused on getting my job, but I still want to play rugby. And I think that would be one way of doing it. And it's certainly been way more interesting. And especially in this environment where rugby is definitely on its knees, as with a lot of other sports, the clout of having, I don't know, Gloucester go down to, say it was a Rosslyn Park.
Yeah.
You can imagine the difference that would make to their gate receipts, or to, you know, and suddenly there's a lot more spreading of that financial clout across, you know, one or two other leagues, which helps the game survive.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, even that, I mean, going back to the 2004 final, that was the same. It was a full Twickenham, a special day against Sale, who had some absolute legends playing for them. That game was never sort of, I mean, what was your sort of thoughts on that game? Because from my memory, it was never a game that we probably should have won.
All I remember from it really is that the lead changed hand about six times.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I'm not quite sure who's going to end up on the top of this. You know, and I think probably the experience we'd had from 2001, where we literally won with the last play of the game, probably worked quite well for us in 2004, because we knew that opportunity might come, and you just had to be in the game to be there and take it. And that proved the case. And, you know, ultimately, what was it, 33-31 or something? You know, that was a great game.
Yeah.
And you don't care how you win it. Do you know what I mean? It's just get over the line.
Yeah, definitely.
Get over the line first.
Definitely. So, I mean, that was sort of some glory times at the Falcons. We then sort of move a few years on and, you know, you're still there and you've got our record try scoring part of it. Just a bit further along when, towards the end of your time at the Falcons, you certainly in that, was it the second half of the in your last season, you switched to fly half, which I just, you know, what was in it? That was it injuries and you just had to step up or what?
Yeah.
Because certainly the whole dynamics of our season changed pretty much on you moving to fly half.
Yeah.
I remember we started playing with, you know, ridiculous speed. We were actually scoring some tries, which was quite surprising to, you know, sit in the south stand and, or stand in the south stand and actually watch us play attractive rugby, because we hadn't really done that for a couple of years. What was the sort of moves behind that? Was it injuries or was it?
So Wilco was injured.
Yeah.
And then Dave got injured. So it ended up, there was Rory Clegg was at fly half for a couple of games. He was still pretty young player. And I think we were playing Gloucester and it was a really windy day at Kingston Park, as most days always seem to be. And I remember at half time, Steve Bates sort of looked at me and he said, "Right, I think we're going to take Rory off. Would you go to 10? And I was sort of like, looked at him and I was like, you know, and anyone that sort of watched me play on the wing, especially, I was never on the wing, I was anywhere but. You know, I was running around all over the place, so I didn't mind being involved. I didn't mind getting my hands on the ball. I just sort of said to Batesy, I was like, "Look, if you're going to put me in there, don't expect me to remember everything."
Yeah,
because you know, I basically had remembered the plays from my wing spot, and I, you know, I'd get on with my own game. anyway, there, I think I kicked this ball. Well, that was it. Maybe I can't remember the exact circumstance. Well, I ended up taking a penalty. I think it might have been towards the end of the first half. And as I kicked it, the wind basically blew like South Stand's post backwards a bit. So basically, I mean, if it had not been windy, it would have either hit the post or gone to the outside of it. But it was that windy, it sort of bent backwards and it sort of let the ball in and then came back up straight and like just sort of wobbled its way in. But it sort of gave me enough confidence to say to basically, right, I'll do that. So anyway, we ended up winning that game against Gloucester. And he sat me down on the Monday. He was like, look, I think I'm just going to chuck you the reins. And he said, I'll give you three things. If you want to run, run. If you want to pass, just, you know, pass it out, chuck it to Nooney. You know, the pair of us had worked far enough, you know, over a number of years to know what each other wanted and what each other needed from the game. So I'd have the trust in him. V call for it, I'll give it. And if you want to kick it, kick it. They were the three things I had on my mind, and that's all I had to do and all I had to remember. And it just released so much pressure off me to know that actually I can't get this wrong, because it's just down to my decision making and make that right. And I was comfortable in certain, you know, trying to manage the game. And we tried to run a bit more, and I think maybe that gave us more confidence, because you try and manage your way away from relegation. You can't just shut up shop and try and not play.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to be attacking. And that, I think maybe Batesy saw that, you know, I wasn't going to sit there and just sort of batten down the hatches and pin corners. I'd at least have a go. That was just my nature as a player. Look, I loved that. Ultimately, it led to me getting capped by England, which I'd waited ages for. So, you know, I really enjoyed that sort of, I think it ended up being about 7 or 8 months.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at it and I think we won 7 out of 9 games after that switch. So it was a stroke of genius from someone. But then, you know, you're right, and it did lead you to that ridiculously long-awaited England cap, because you'd been in the squad, was it 2002?
Yeah, I've been in the squad for quite a while, and around.
You know, was that sort of frustrating? Did you think maybe the ship had sailed on your England career?
I think you do at some point. You know, because I've been there or thereabouts, I probably felt in my mind I deserved a chance earlier on. Now that didn't come, so you've just got to move on. I was probably guilty of trying to change my game to suit what someone wanted to see at points in my career as well.
Yeah.
Whereas rather than focusing on what made me good, which I think is... It's quite an interesting message to see young players coming through. Is, you know, it's very easy to say, well, you know, this coach wants a player to do X, Y, Z. Well, if that's not you, don't try to be that guy.
Yeah.
Or that player, because you know you are where you are because of the sort of your own internal strengths that got you there. So stick with them and make them better. I think. Yeah, I was disappointed not to have got capped earlier, and I think probably in hindsight, and you know, I'm not being sort of arrogant in saying this, I probably deserve more than two.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah, me and Pete were talking about this before, because obviously, given how well you did for the Falklands, you did deserve more than two.
But yeah.
Was it frustrating for you seeing a lot of your kind of, you know, colleagues in the backs of Newcastle Falcons go on and get caps when you've been doing it longer than they had and you've been achieving more than they had?
Yeah, I think, look, you're happy for them, but there is something that is frustrating from a personal point of view. You're like, well, what the hell am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And then you start to, you know, maybe you sort of self-analyse too much then. And you start to think, well, and that was probably where I started to change the elements of my game to fit what I thought was needed to be seen. You know, and that, you know, that was all part of me learning how to deal with it, I guess. But I think there's two different ways to look at it. I played a lot of positions when I was up at Newcastle, which gave me a massive game understanding from whether it was fly half to fullback, or scrum half occasionally. But I think that allowed me to prolong my career. So if you look at maybe some of the other guys, they were in one position and their careers didn't last as long.
Yeah.
Whereas actually my strength came from what really a lot of people would say, well, he was a jack of all trades. Actually, that allowed me to have a longer career because people go, well, he can play wing, he can play fullback. I played fullback, wing, both centres and 10 at Northampton.
Yeah.
And that's 2 years after I left Newcastle, and I played wing, fly half, scrum half, both centres at Toulon.
Yeah.
You know, it adds value. And you look at how people try and structure squads, you go, right, well, I can spend that much on this player because he's never going to go away. He's always going to be here and he'll cover five different positions.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously that versatility as well, as you mentioned, it gives you that range of skills, and it probably sees you, you know, you'll see a game in a different light in the different positions that you play. Do you think if you'd left the Falcons maybe a few years earlier, do you think you might have got more England caps? Because it's obviously, I mean, it's no secret that players up at the Falcons probably don't get the right treatment maybe from England. That's just, it's quite obvious that there's a lot of caps that should be given to Falcons players, but they're not for some reason. Do you think it was that one of the reasons that you left, that you maybe wanted more England caps, or was it, you know, do you think if you'd left earlier, you might have had more?
So to answer your first question about leaving, and in relation to caps, I think we struggled at times, and we found ourselves, you know, mid-table or battling at the bottom, which doesn't lend itself to coaches going, right, let's pick from these teams.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what sport it is. It always seems to be that way. You'll get this, you know, you'll get someone like Mark Wilson that stands out, or, you know, then and they'll get capped in that space, or myself in that year that I got capped, and you'll get these sort of anomalies that come through. But then when you look at someone like, I don't know, Exeter, it's riddled, or, you know, Saracens is riddled. I mean, there's no, you know, they're just playing top end rugby all the time.
Yeah.
So that, I can understand that. I did have opportunities to leave during my career when I was at the Falcons. Philippe Saint-André tried to sign me to go to Sale, but I didn't ever go there. I strangely he came back and, you know, ultimately signed me to go to Toulon. And there was a couple of other opportunities that I looked at as well, including rugby league.
Oh really?
I went down to see. Now, who was the Sevens coach back? I've forgotten his name now. He was England Sevens coach, and he'd basically been a Joe Lydon.
All right.
So he'd been an absolute legend at Wigan, and played a huge amount of rugby league. Came over to the England Sevens. I had a couple of goes on the Sevens circuit, and I actually became pretty close to signing for Wigan. Ultimately, it came down to the fact that I'd never played league before. And there was a certain disparity between union wages and league wages.
Yeah.
So it didn't really make financial sense for them. But it was really interesting to go down and see those athletes, because they are freaks of nature.
Yeah, those completely league
blokes. So that was quite interesting. But I think ultimately it got to a point where I was like, look, I think it was sort of around February time. In that last year I had at the Falcons, 2009, and I had a phone call from my agent saying, you know, would you look at Toulon? They've come in for you. And it was Philippe who'd gone over there. And I honestly did not know where it was when I was asked. As soon as I looked it up,
given the
amount of stick I've had about how much I enjoyed tanning,
it was a no-brainer.
Wasn't really a tough decision. So yeah, look, it made sense. I chatted to Batesy. It wasn't an opportunity that that he wanted me to miss either. I'd been very loyal to that club, and you know, I deserved that opportunity to go and try something new and gain an experience, not just on a rugby field, but from a life experience that, you know, I'll never forget. I would, you know, probably when the kids are a bit older, we'd look at going back there, because I think South France is just such an amazing place to live, and it gives you a bit more perspective on how you should live your life. Not, you know, not in terms of being flash, but just a bit more laid back, and, you know, enjoy the weather, see the sea, which seems to have a great effect on me as a person in terms of how I view my days.
So you're telling me you didn't go in the North Sea every day in Newcastle?
Only when I had dead legs and I was forced to go to physios. So that, in fact, there was one week I got a dead leg against someone like Leeds, I think it was, and I was in the sea for half an hour every day for 4 days, up to my sort of chest. And I remember the physio saying, right, you've got to go down, because I was still at uni, I think, at the time. You've got to go down with one of your housemates just to make sure you don't sort of, I don't know, get washed away or something. Sorry, you there?
Yeah, yeah.
Funnily
yeah.
enough, yeah. That blocked out. That was, I don't know why he was ringing me. That was Matt Burke.
How was it?
Yeah. Oh. So I don't know whether maybe he's having a couple of beers in Sydney. I don't know, but he fancied ringing. That was a bit strange, given he's in my ultimate 15 that we're going to talk about in a bit.
Maybe that's why he called you, just to make sure he's in there.
But yeah, you know, it was a great opportunity, slightly warmer than the North Sea, as we were saying. But yeah, a fantastic 2 years of my life down there.
And it seemed to be a time that was filled with some almost success, because in your first season, you made the top 14 semi-final and the Challenge Cup final against Cardiff. So just kind of talk us through your memories of those games.
You there, lads?
Yes, yeah.
Sorry. Sounds like you cut off.
Oh, can you still hear them?
Have I lost them?
No, I'm here.
All right.
Sorry.
Yeah, we were just saying you had some, you had some close success with Toulon, with making the top 14 semi final in your first season, and the Challenge Cup final again.
Yeah, I don't know if can you hear Darren?
Tom? No.
No. Right.
All right. So Pete, you crack on then.
I'll be sort of. Yeah, so Darren was basically just asking about your time at Toulon in that first season. You'd got to the semi-final of the league and the final of the Challenge Cup as well.
Yeah.
To come so close in both those games must have been heartbreaking, because they were quite close to each other, within a week of each other or sort of something along those lines.
There was a massive game in St Etienne against Clermont.
Yes, that was it, yeah.
And we just lost out in that one. But how we lost that European Challenge Cup final, I do not know. I think we were about 20 points to 3 up at halftime, and ultimately lost the game in the Velodrome in Marseille. That was really disappointing. I found that was so tough to take, because we'd done so well as a team to get to that point in a team that had basically just been assembled. Disappointing, I think, from a memories point of view, another opportunity to win something, but missed out. But so many great guys to play with down in that team.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. It was sort of very much just a almost pick some stars and get them in a team and more sort of build for the future and build the brand of Toulon. And I need to ask, what's the owner like at Toulon? Because he comes across as just the most mad guy in rugby. Is he as mad in real life as he comes across?
So Mourad Boujalal, he's not owner anymore, I don't think. I think he's sold up, but. He was a complete lunatic. He just loved being part of it. He was, to be fair to him, he's done a massive amount for that club. He's put it on the map in a huge way.
Yeah.
And forever, people are giving him stick. But when someone's done something like that, if they didn't have that passion, it wouldn't be where it is. So, you know, he was completely bonkers. But he'd done so much in his life to help get that club to where it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And without those people sort of ingrained into the history of the club, you wouldn't have it. So, yeah, he probably did one or two things in ways that weren't the most satisfactory for players or coaches. But I think you have to balance that out with what he was bringing.
Yeah, I mean, what was it like sort of being in that environment with some of the players that you had, as well on the sort of flip side? They're a very demanding fan base there as well, aren't they? That you know, you've almost sort of football like the pressures of playing for them must have been quite tough from that side of things as well. Was that, as you know, you always hear stories about Toulon fans being very vocal and animated, and they obviously just want their team to win. Was it as high pressured as it comes across?
Yeah, you lose, you knew about it. You know, you go for a meal in a restaurant or something, someone come and tell you that, you know, we played rubbish or something at the weekend, and that some of the guys had branded scooters from a local garage. Yeah, so if we'd lost, like, the fans would kick them over in the street. It was like, right, okay. And, you know, you go down there and the club's sponsored by Volkswagen. Every player's got a Volkswagen car, but they are branded up to the hill, as you can imagine, in France, and there's no hiding from it. So if you're driving on the road and you've lost, you've got people in the traffic jam, you know, you can see them talking and looking at you, and like, it's like, oh no, this is like this. So, but, you know, great, because if on the winning, if you're on the winning side and you're doing well, you know, it swings and roundabouts, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like you say, it's a bit like football, very, very sort of fickle nature at times, in the way that the fans can be. But, you know, I wouldn't have swapped it for anything.
No. I mean, fantastic place to live as well. So what were your sort of highlights of playing there? Was it, you know, obviously you're in a world apart from Newcastle and, you know, the cold Kingston Park, but, you know, what were your sort of highlights of playing there? Was that sort of, were they sort of some of your glory days of playing rugby? Was it just lifestyle and everything?
Yeah, I think everything, the whole package was what made it what it was. You know, clearly financially it made sense. But you know, I was pretty good at French at school, so, and I actually quite enjoyed it. So to get the opportunity to go over there and speak French, I ended up getting to the point where I was pretty much fluent. And I was thinking in French as well as speaking it, which is really quite, that's the sort of moment in time where you reach where you're not doing that translation piece in your head.
Yeah.
And it made it so much easier, and, you know, I really enjoyed speaking it. Mind you, if you put me back there now, it would be like, oh my God, straight back to those Tricolore books from school. But, you know, it's, I think it was the whole package, you know, amazing lifestyle, amazing place to play in terms of stadium, amazing fans, great teammates, and a brilliant 2 years.
Do you think that, I mean, you had your two England caps in 2009, just before you moved to Toulon. Do you think moving to Toulon maybe hindered getting more England caps?
I was 31 by then.
Yeah.
So I was probably on the you know, last chance saloon, whether it would be with regards to England caps. So probably not. And which is why I think it would have been a fool to say, right, I've got these two caps. I've waited that long.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I, you know, I felt like I'd almost gone through that period prior to that, 10, 11 years, whatever it was, to get to a point where actually I'd earned that opportunity to go over to France. Now, I'd be daft to have turned that down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have changed moving over there.
But Darren, I don't know if you're there and it's...
Yeah, I was just going to say, if Tom can hear me, just about the move. Like, how did the move to...
So when Darren speaks, he goes very... It, the whole thing cuts out for me.
Oh, does it? I can hear it. I can hear Darren.
It must be his accent.
It must be. Darren, are you? Do you want to maybe dial back in, or how do you want to do it, Darren?
No, it's all right, man. You just crack on.
Right. So you sort of left. You left Toulon. You moved to back to England. How did that sort of move come about? Back to Northampton.
So I, when you had weekends off in France, you were allowed to do things that perhaps you're not allowed to do in England, like go skiing. I was on a ski lift in Belvedere, and I had a phone call from Jim Mallander, and he said, the rumours are that you're on a ski lift. And you know when you're going over the sort of joins in the lift, you can hear that sort of...
Yeah.
I went over one of those just as he said it, and I was like, I've got two options here. I could lie flat out to him and that's the start of my relationship with him, or I just come out and I'm honest, and I just burst out laughing. I was like, no, I'm having the time of my life and I'm skiing. He was like, brilliant. Right. So I went and had a look at the club, and you know, again, going from Toulon to Northampton at a team that's very passionate, you know, with a passionate fan base, great stadium, is a rugby city, rugby town.
And
a side that I would always respected as a player playing against them. I thought it was a great opportunity for me to go there. And, you know, I wanted to come back to the UK before I finished my career because I was thinking ahead. You know, I wanted to build up that sort of network I had. So I took that opportunity, and it was a great opportunity for me to take.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember coming back to Kingston Park when you were a Northampton player.
Yeah. Was it you that I hit?
Luckily it wasn't me. No. I was chatting to my brother about sort of speaking to you, and he'd mentioned it, and it just sort of, I've got a vague memory of, did you score in front of the South Stand, and you know, some of the South Stand giving you some?
No,
you some
what it was.
You just sort of...
So where the opposition subs sit on that East Stand, the chat that I was getting all through the game was horrific.
Yeah,
like Judas and all this, and I was like, really?
For moving from Newcastle to the south of France
after 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I, you know, my teammates were looking at me going, this, like, some of this is pretty harsh, and I listened to what 65 minutes of it, and I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I was desperate to get on by that point. I was like, right. And then, you know, I think basically my first touch of the ball, and I ended up scoring that right hand corner, and I think my sort of pent up 65 minutes of just having to bite my lip made me launch this ball, but I launched it pretty flat into the south stand, and I think I might have hit someone with a ball, so I apologize to whoever that was. You know, it certainly wasn't their chat during the game that wound me up, but I just didn't feel like I deserved that from that sort of small number of people. That
no, I mean, certainly not at all. I mean, you look at 250 odd appearances in the top try scorer, two trophies, Heineken Cup. It's certainly not warranted in rugby at all. I think where rugby is very different is people need to think about their career and their finances a lot more than potentially you would in a football. So certainly to leave the Falcons and go to Toulon, I'm very surprised that anyone would have any gap. I'm sure every single person in that East End would have the same thoughts as
probably
as coming as moving there. So Northampton, you'd done very well there. You'd had a couple of, I think you'd got to the final of the Premiership there, and I think you were on the bench that day. Were you?
When we lost, Dylan got sent off.
Yeah. What was sort of everything behind that? Was it just, look, it's all right, Dylan, look, these things happen, or was there a few people who were actually a bit pissed off at that and thought, you know, that was my opportunity to win the Premiership?
Yeah, I think obviously we were really disappointed as a squad, and he was very apologetic for having been sent off. He swears by the fact that he didn't say what he said, and you know, there's who knows what went on. I was never close enough to a scrum to be able to comment on anything like that. Anyway,
yeah.
The weird thing was, so I'd been commuting at that time So the last 6 months of my career, I was living in London at Northampton. So I was driving from London every day up to Northampton.
Yeah.
And I lived opposite Wayne Barnes.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
So when he was sent off and the lads knew I was living opposite Wayne Barnes, the lads were like, oh, should we go to your house? I'm
like, Egger's house, yeah.
You're not coming anywhere near my house. You can go away. But yeah, look, we're obviously very disappointed to have lost in that final. But you know, I think it was for me, I really enjoyed my 2 years at Northampton, a great club. You know, slightly different from playing in France, where if things are going wrong, things maybe go a bit quieter. But generally, there's just a support for you, which I think is different from the UK to France generally.
Yeah.
When it comes to sport. But yeah, a brilliant couple of years. I nearly went to Leicester, I think, before I went to Toulon.
See, that would have got some grief from the stand.
Yeah.
If you'd gone there.
Yeah. So I nearly went to Leicester before I went to Toulon with Richard Cockle. And then I nearly went after Saints. But that obviously would have ruffled a few feathers at Franklin's Gardens. So I ended up, you know, I had two chances to go to Leicester, but I never went. I don't know. In a way, I'd love to have seen what it'd been like to play for a club like that. But
yeah,
you have to do what's right at the time. And when I left Northampton, I wanted to play, and I knew I had an opportunity to play at London Welsh. I didn't want to go up and sit behind Manu and just twiddle my thumbs and sit in the gym.
Sort of one last crack of a professional rugby, and you know, it was a good crack as well. I mean, that London Welsh side, when they got promoted, because they got promoted, I think it was mid-June,
we had about a month to recruit.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was a bit of a mad time having London Welsh in the Premiership. You know, having the likes of, you know, yourself was there, Piri Wepu was there as well. Yeah. And we've had Ollie Steadman on the show a few weeks ago, and he mentioned Piri Wepu and him coming to Welsh and potentially not being the best trainer that you'll ever see. I don't think there's any secret behind that. What was it like playing in that environment at Welsh, where everything's against you? You're getting beaten most weeks. Was that sort of tough to take?
I signed there on a 1 year deal when I left Northampton. And so the game that London Welsh got relegated in was they played Northampton, and I scored two tries against London Welsh to relegate them. Oh. I mean, there cannot be any more scenario. We came back into the change room afterwards, and Jim Mallinger said, "Well done, fellas. We do have to think about Tom in this point in time, because he's just relegated the team that he's going to," which was slightly weird. But look, I went there and the aim was to try and help them be as professional as they could.
Yeah.
Could be in that championship. And we did brilliantly in that championship to go straight back up against, you know, the likes of Bristol, who had far more financial clout.
Yeah, definitely.
Had more experience at that level. And I think when I got offered the opportunity to sign one more year and be captain of the Premiership, you know, why would I turn that down? And I think our problem was, like you mentioned, we couldn't recruit early.
We weren't
guaranteed of a place in the Premiership, and we didn't have the financial capability to cope if we hadn't made that step up.
Yeah.
So everything needed to be done and dusted. But, you know, there was myself, Piri, as you mentioned, Dean Schofield, Ollie Barkley.
Gavin Henson, did he play with?
No, I played with him at Toulon.
Yeah.
He was in the sort of 2 years before that. Really, there was only probably five or six experienced Premiership players. And then it was a case of trying to form these young lads into a team that was capable of competing. Now, we were capable of competing for about 50 minutes, but for 40 minutes, 50 minutes, but a low number. And physically, we'd just been left behind by the Premiership. And I think that's what makes the Premiership so difficult now, is that teams are so fit that actually you have 1 year out of that length of competition, and it's tough to go back.
And do you think that, I mean, do you think that's maybe one of the reasons why you potentially look to ring fence it and get the Championship, you know, get them up to a level and, you know, only promote a side that's 100% ready for that
otherwise you end up having a yo-yo system whereby you know, someone's just caught short every year. And until someone makes a howler like Saracens, then, you know, you're waiting for that point in time. But, you know, I think I like the idea of, you know, giving 2-3 seasons to the team that goes up, the chance to settle, the chance to build.
Yeah.
And then whoever finishes bottom in that third year, then they have a playoff. But after 3 years playing at that level, there is no chance that playoff is ever going to be won by a Championship team, in my opinion. You know, so it's not ring fenced, but really, it's because they won't be able to compete.
Yeah, definitely. Darren, I don't know if you've got any sort of final questions before we move on to the Ultimate 15.
Ultimate 15 is good with me.
I can't hear him.
He's saying nice things, don't worry, Tom. After such a great career, you must have played with some legends. So let's have a crack at your Ultimate 15. If you've already done it, we've had Mike McCarthy, who didn't do his homework.
You'd have been here for ages. One of them's already tried to ring me. Matt Burke, I'll have him at fullback. Brilliantly, I pressed the "sorry, I can't talk right now" option on my phone, and he sent me the most abusive message back saying, "Did I just cut him off?" Which was, yes, I did. So I'd have Matt Burke at fullback.
Spot on. He was...
Never met a player who could read a game like him.
No, he was... I mean, we had him on a few weeks ago, and I remember watching him play, and he made he was defending a 2-on-1, and he managed to tackle both players. I've never seen it before. He was a joy to watch for those couple of years he was in Newcastle.
We had when I was playing on the wing and he was at fullback, we used to have all sorts of conversations going on at the back. It was hilarious. I've got Inga Twigamala on the right wing.
Oh, wow.
Was he first £1 million transfer? Probably wider than he was short or tall.
And rapid as well.
Rapid, big skills.
And a lovely bloke.
I've got Sonny Bill Williams at 13. So I played with him at Toulon. In that 2000, that first year at Toulon, I mean, that guy was—he's just a freak of nature.
And again, comes across as a good bloke as well. So, you know, he's one of those good-looking lad, amazing at every sport that he does.
Yeah,
good bloke. Yeah.
He put me in, so I've put him in. I've put Nooney in, but he'd be closely followed by Felipe Contepomi.
Right. Okay.
I think when you just play with someone for so long, you've got such an understanding of what they're going to do. You know, fearless tackler. Occasionally would fall asleep once he'd made a tackle, having concussed himself ridiculously. But, it closely follows, as I say, by Philippe Contepomi, who was at Toulon. Played against him when he was at Bristol, played against him when he was playing for Argentina. And with him at Toulon, that guy was a great player.
Definitely.
Jason Robinson on the left wing. Wilco's at 10. With Gary Armstrong at 9. Then it got quite tough because you start to think about back rowers and it's like, where do you try and fit them all in?
Yeah.
So I've got Joe van Niekerk at 8. The South African number 8. He, as an athlete, he was amazing. And as a motivator, was off the charts when we were at Toulon. I mean, everything revolved around him.
He was rapid as well.
Ridiculous. I've got George Smith at 7. So he was at Toulon when I went there. One of the most talented all-round players. I mean, they put him in the centre one game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, he's, he had, He's a bad one to retire, to then come out of retirement and then to be one of the best flankers in the Premiership when he played.
Shows you how good he was.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, Eddie Jones speaks so highly of him, and he did a lot of work with the England squad as well in that sort of last season when he was in England. I mean, he's just an absolute... He's a definition of a freak of nature to retire and come back and then just be unbelievable at the sport.
Definitely. Now, I've had all sorts of people going in at six. I had Courtney Laws, but I've now moved him out of there. I had Juan Fernandez Lobe, but I've moved him out of there. So I've ended up with Epi Tayoni.
Paddy Power.
Yeah, I've ended up with the original Paddy Power. Just based on the fact that when he was fit and when he was playing at six, he was an absolute nightmare for opposition.
You could have put him on the wing because he played there occasionally, didn't he?
Played in the centre, played in the wing, but I'm going to have him at six. Which then means I can move Courtney Laws into the second row. So he can just go around mullering people.
Yeah, that's quite hard.
It gets harder. It gets harder in the second row. So I put Sammy Manoa next to him.
Oh, God.
Who was at Northampton when I went there. So we basically used to kick restarts towards Samu, who would then jump with one hand and catch it one-handed. It was absolutely ridiculous. So unfortunately, my mate Dean Schofield misses out, but he'll get in there on... He'd be in there on the drinking 15.
Oh, really?
Now, I've tried to squeeze them in together. So I've got Swani Tongawea from Northampton and Carl Heyman as my props. So they're both pretty handy. Could both play as well as push.
Yeah.
I remember that one game, it was probably in those 7 months when I was at 10, and we had a scrum to last play of the game against Sale, and we needed to get the ball back off them, and Carl just obviously went into like freak mode and just pushed the whole scrum backwards and we came out with the ball. It was brilliant. We got a try, kick goal, job done. Sale having won.
I can remember him. I can remember him kicking the ball once, and he kicked it from about 60 yards, and it just bounced perfectly into the 5 meter channel.
Yeah.
Play it have. He's probably coming for his the last couple of years of his career, and maybe didn't, you know, he wasn't in the shape that he was a few years prior to that. But what a quality player he was for us. He was just an absolute freak.
Yeah. And at hooker, I've got Dylan Hartley. Not everyone's cup of tea, but when I was at Northampton, he was our captain. He wouldn't take a backward step.
Yeah.
I ended up having a couple of scraps with him in training before, but you know it didn't really matter. We both knew what we were about, and it was all for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So, and actually, exercises like that make you realise how lucky you are, because I could probably make 4 15s that are about as strong as that.
I'd probably say that's one of the stronger ones we've had. I mean, I think discipline's going to let that side down a little bit.
Well, if you think drinking might be an issue in this one. Carl. George Smith, Van Niekerk, Gary Armstrong. There's a few in there that can have a night out.
But what a side as well, and what a career to have played with all those guys and across so many different years, and to have got the England caps that you fully deserved, although it should have been a lot more. But look, the south of France is an amazing place, so I'm not surprised that you were there. So what's your sort of like overall riding those sort of what 15 years of your career, what's that one moment that you think is, you know, that was it, that was the epitome of my career, that was the best moment of my career?
I think it's probably easy to point out the England caps because you worked so hard and it's a personal achievement, but I think probably winning those two cups with the team at Newcastle were because they're the lads you do stuff day in, day out with. They're the ones you're sick with in pre-season. They're the ones you've gone through all the hard moments in your career, and then to come up with some two bits of silverware just makes a massive difference, you know. So I'd say those two cup wins were probably
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they were fantastic. Some fantastic years there as well. But Darren, unless you've got anything else from you?
No, that's a cracking team. So I'll
still not contributing down. into my. I can't hear him.
Yeah,
he's basically just sat there listening, isn't he?
8 years. He's probably on his Xbox
playing Jon Loma rugby.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. well. Tom, thank you very much for that, and on behalf of Darren as well, thank you very much for your team and chatting us through a very special career. Sorry we lost sort of Darren at the end there, but no, Darren passes on his thanks for coming on, and yeah, hopefully we'll speak to you soon, and when you call Berkey back, tell him that you put him in at 15.
I will. Thank you very much for having me.
Cheers, Tom. Thank you very Cheers. Much. Bye now. Bye.
So yeah, I don't know what happened with the gremlins in the system there, but we got what we wanted in the end.
Yeah, some guy, some team as well at the end there. I'm just having a little look through it here. There's a couple of yellow cards in them, but that's some side.
Absolutely. As a Falcons fan, where does Tom sit in your kind of pantheon of Falcons player?
I mean, he is in that bracket of Matt Burke. I think what he did for us in those first few years to, you know, help us. Yeah, I mean, he was so key in winning us those two trophies, and then to be our record try scorer. I mean, he certainly is a Falcons legend, and it is a shame to hear that he maybe had a bit of a tough time when he came back for Northampton. So maybe that launch of the ball into the south stand was slightly justified, unless he knocked over a 2-pint, and then there would have been some issues, I think. But he certainly ranks definitely towards the top, you know, with Berkey, with Wilkinson, Noon. You know, they're all in a league of their own, those lot.
Yeah, and it is a massive shame for him about you know, only picking up those two England caps. I know we had some excellent players to compete with along the way, like you know, the Jason Robinson and all those other superstar wingers that were in there, but he absolutely deserved more than two.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, he was right when he was talking about he's so versatile, he can play anywhere. That's probably one of the reasons why I'm more surprised that he didn't get more England caps, because he's the perfect tourist, isn't he? You know, you bring him along and he's got a bit of that Elliot Daly where, you know, you trust him to kick, you trust him at outside centre, you trust him on the wing, you trust him at fullback. So, yeah, it is a shame that he didn't get more caps, because he fully deserves them, but still had a great career and moving past the Falcons at Toulon and, you know, achieving a lot there, and then coming back from France but still being a top quality player when he played at Northampton. You see a lot of players that will leave France and come back and, you know, they've had their holiday and maybe they're not at the standard where they were before. So, yeah, he's, you know, had a fantastic career at Northampton and then at Welsh after.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed our chat with Tom as much as we did. That brings us up to episode 7 now. So if you enjoy listening, please subscribe to the channel. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Anchor. You can find us on Spotify. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts as well. So please do subscribe and make sure you follow us on Twitter to keep up to date with all our latest episodes. That's it for me and Pete for today. So we'll see everyone next time.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.